You're listening to the Rizzoli and Isles podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jay. And today we have a return special guest, Liv. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Yay.
Hey, guys.
Instead of doing RizzlesCon, we're actually going to recap the season 3 premiere, What Doesn't Kill You. So it starts off, it's outside the warehouse. It's like probably like a few minutes after the cliffhanger of season 2, which thank God, because oh my God, if they'd have done the exact same thing like last season, I would have probably threw my remote at the TV.
Same here. I did not want any long gaps between what took place at the end of season 2 and the premiere.
Well, it's nice to actually see some repercussions happen as opposed to everything being perfectly fine.
So that news reporter that was on Born to Run comes back.
I noticed.
And you noticed, like, oh, I just remembered. He was also in the season 2 premiere.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was. He is talking about the shooting that happened in the warehouse. It's basically like giving like a heads up, I'm guessing, to anyone who's never saw the show. Okay, this is what happened.
Yeah, which I thought it was kind of clever for anybody who hadn't seen the finale and was just tuning in for the first time. It kind of made it easier for them to catch on.
Jane is upset about the whole situation, including Mara.
As she should be.
Corsac comes along and tells Jane that she did the right thing. Doyle is a mobster and he shot an FBI agent, so she had no choice. Right.
Which is all true. I mean, Doyle killed 15 people in relative cold blood, and on top of all of that, he shot Dean in the leg and was aiming at Frost or Rizzoli, it's hard to tell, but he was aiming at the other two cops when she shot him.
So then we head to a flashback of the shooting, which was another good way of showing what happened in the cliffhanger. And then after that flashback, Mara walks by and she throws Jane's jacket to Jane. She's upset. Oh, she's pissed.
Yeah. She was really pissed. She's like, here's your jacket back.
And Jane's like, come on. Jane's saying, you know, she had to do it. She had no choice. And Mara defends Doyle, saying that without Doyle, she'd most likely be dead because he was there protecting her, which is sort of true because the way how the shoot, it happened so fast that if Doyle wasn't there, Mara probably would have been dead or shot. Mara starts getting upset, saying that you didn't tell me that Dean was going to be in this investigation. And she's like, your boyfriend. And I was like, oh, snap.
Yeah, well, to me, that was a personal dig. When she said boyfriend, it wasn't so much as referring to Dean as trying to get underneath Jane's skin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty clear.
And she also thinks that Jane knew about Dean following them. Jane says no, she did not know. And then Mara defends Doyle, again saying that if he wanted Dean dead, he would be dead. And that,
which I think is probably not true. I think Doyle flat out missed his shot.
Yeah.
Come on. He's going to aim to kill. He's not going to aim to wound. Why would you aim to wound a cop?
Well, and if you think about it too, he had already been shot at that point. So obviously he's going to be a bit off kilter anyway.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So Jane calls Mara naive and ignorant. Ouch. That was kind of painful to watch. I was like, I'm surprised Mara didn't slap her. I would have slapped her. I'm like, oh.
Mara's face said, oh, no, you didn't.
I said, oh, no, she did. And I was like, oh, what?
And then she was right back in.
I was cheering Jane on. I was totally on Jane's side. Because she's right. Mara is ignorant if she thinks that Doyle was there to do anything but kill a whole bunch of people. I'm pretty sure Doyle would have killed everyone in that room but Mara if he'd had the opportunity.
I concur.
Mara tells Jane, I don't know how she says it, but it's basically saying, I don't judge people without a jury or something.
No, she calls Jane that at least she's not, she doesn't pretend to be judge and jury.
Yes.
And she doesn't kill people.
Yeah, so she walks away. Then Corsac returns saying, like, they will make up. And Jane's like, yeah, that's
what they said about the Beatles.
And you could actually see Jane, like, shaking a bit. Feels bad for the situation. Like, she shot Mara's dad. And she regrets having Mara to go undercover. Then it shows the best flashback ever.
It was pretty epic.
Because people's hands were everywhere and there was back arching and other assorted questionable Rizzle's activities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah.
Like, 5 minutes straight of Jane pushing her hands up underneath Mora's shirt in various locations around her chest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably it. Yeah.
I didn't notice. Didn't notice.
And the funny thing about it was just like 3 minutes in the episode. And I was like, oh my God, this is, oh my God. I jizzed in my pants. I queefed everywhere. It was insane. I was just like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever. So basically, I'm gonna have to go through. Okay, here we go. I'm not picturing it in my head, but I'm totally picturing it in my head. So Jane and Mara are preparing to go undercover, and Jane's helping Mara put on the wire, and she's just like, just her hand, and there's touching, and like boobage, and just touching with the wire, and Mara's so excited because she's like, this is her first undercover assignment, which
is a lie.
Well, no, I mean, it is per se. I mean, yes, she was undercover and I Kissed a Girl, but even though she was undercover, she wasn't wearing a wire. So I
she
guess...
She was undercover. I mean, this was not her first undercover assignment. This was her first lead in an undercover assignment, but it wasn't her first undercover assignment. Again, there is just no consistency from episode to episode or from season to season.
True. And when she said that, I was like, the first thing I thought, I was like, what about I Kissed a Girl? Maybe she should have said, this is my first lead in an undercover. That would have been different.
Except then she went off to tell Jane that it was just that Jane was jealous because she wasn't the one going undercover. Negative.
And so she does an impression of someone. I don't know who that person is, though.
Donnie Brasco?
Yeah.
Which, the way she did it was sort of hot. Anyway, so Mar goes on and on about saying, like, oh, she can't imagine being a cop. I hope that's not foreshadowing anywhere. And,
She's talking about the flak jackets that Jane has to wear and how she says they even make Jane look chunky, which I was like, what? Jane chunky? Never happened.
Yes. And Jane's like, oh, well, you look like a trash collector when you wear your scrubs for autopsy. And even Mara's like, yeah, I agree.
Except for the black scrubs. I like the black scrubs. I don't think she looks trash baggy in the black one.
I don't think she looks trash baggy at all.
She could be wearing a potato sack and she would still look good.
So Jane calls Mara the dumbest genius she's ever known.
Which is kind of like a backhanded compliment, but okay.
It kind of makes sense. It does. Some moments she's dumb and I'm like, but you're a genius, and it's just weird. So Mara acts because of this whole undercover thing. Does it display aggression? And that Jane would be her backup, which the way she did it too, I was like, are you hitting on Jane or what are you doing? This is like, this whole time, I was like, and Jane's just not paying attention. I'm like, pay attention, Jane, pay attention to what she's doing. She's giving you clues.
And the little dance that she does too was really, really cute. I was like, oh, excited Mara is so adorable.
Really bouncy Mara is a benefit. Like, I'm never going to turn down a scene where Mara is bouncing around.
Exactly.
No. Not gonna happen.
So Jane tries to be serious because she's worried. And Mara says something about, what do you say when you have to pull the string? And Jane's like, it's a sting. And Mara's like, don't worry. What can go wrong? And I'm like, everything.
Famous last words.
What?
Yes, because that was creative writing right there. That dialogue was real highbrow, wasn't it?
Very.
Every time a character says that, you're like, and bad shit's gonna happen.
Exactly. Like, if you're gonna, like, put red flashing lights with, like, an arrow and a big red circle around it, this is foreshadowing. Use that sentence.
Exactly. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Everything. You're gonna run upstairs and the killer is going to chase you and you're going to die. That's what's going to happen.
You're gonna turn down the wrong road. It's a shortcut. What could go wrong?
See, in life, no one should ever say that. It's just guaranteed that something horrible is going to happen.
I'm just gonna pick up this random stranger off the road. What can go wrong? Flashback to the present time, and it's the warehouse. Kavanaugh wants to know what happened. So Jane explains what's going on. So Kavanaugh takes Jane's gun because that's evidence and says now the internal affairs want an investigation.
And you're like, oh, shizzle.
Right. So then we go to the convenience store. There's two guys talking about the shooting. One of the guys, he was talking about, yeah, Jane and Mara, they're best friends. Now we found out that Dr. Isles is related to Doyle, right? Now, here's a theory. In the first two seasons, it was a big thing that no one can know that Mara and Doyle are related. Now the whole city of Boston knows that Mara is Doyle's daughter.
I thought about that. I did think about that, because it was on the news. That's why they started talking about it, because they announced that Mara was Patty Doyle's daughter. So now everyone knows who she is, and if she was ever in trouble before, doesn't that make it like 1,000 times worse now?
Exactly.
Like, shouldn't she be in hiding? Shouldn't she be in, like, WITSEC or something?
Exactly, because the other mob rivals that Patty Doyle had didn't, like, magically disappear.
My theory is, hopefully, they didn't forget this, hopefully maybe a season finale of either the summer or the winter finale, that they go back to this and there will be some repercussion about everyone knowing that Mar is Doyle's daughter. That's what I hope.
Or they'll just conveniently forget.
Pretty much. I'm going with that. I'm going with option number two.
That's a great setup. I mean, how can you not see that? That's the first thing I thought of when I watched it. I was like, that's...
Dean being Hoyt's apprentice was a great setup, but are they going to do it? No.
We never know. Anyway, so a guy walks in and kills the two guys. Next, we head to... the BPD, and we have the Internal Affairs guy. He's interviewing Jane about Doyle and Dean, and
immediately you're like, oh, he's the killer. Come on. He's the villain of the episode.
Promos. Anyway.
I didn't even have to see the promos to go, oh, he did it.
It wasn't the lighting that gave it away, was it? Or was it his, like, beady eyes, or how he just acted shady compared to the rest of the cops?
Yeah,
I mean, none of that was a dead giveaway at all.
Not at all. No.
So he starts talking about Dean, and then we flash back to, like, Jane and Dean. I was like, oh, there goes my dinner. Oh, gross.
At least we didn't see his man boobs this time. Like, all we saw was Angie's back, so that was okay.
So we go to the hospital, and the surgeon talks to Mara about Doyle and tells Mara about his status, that he's basically paralyzed because he can't walk. He has no feeling in his legs. Mara has to reveal to the surgeon that's her dad because the surgeon wants to know if there's any family. Okay, so then we go back to PPD. And he's talking about Dean and about, do you have relations with all your colleagues? And I'm like, ugh. He's such a mess.
Oh, see, now I have a mental picture of Jane and Corsac that's never going to leave me.
Oh, God.
I appreciate that. That's great.
You had to share.
I'll be back now. Just, like, give me a couple of seconds.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's so...
Okay, we're not doing... Nope, she can't guest star anymore. Oh, God. After that comment. Oh, God. Back to the episode, please. And, So another... Amanda calls this guy Wayne Brady.
He looked like Wayne Brady.
He sort of did, just a tad. So he comes in and asks Jane if did a bolo on Doyle. She says no. And they think because of her relationship with Mara.
Which it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were right.
So Corsac and Kavanaugh find out that a cop was killed, and so they go in there and they interrupt to investigate this crime because a cop was killed.
I have a question, though. So the cop was killed by Wayne Brady? Is that what they were trying to say throughout the entire episode? The cop was killed by Wayne Brady? It wasn't...
No, they were trying to set up Jane to make it look like she had a hand in being a dirty cop and causing the killings to happen. But they weren't trying to pin it on your Wayne Brady dude. He was just there.
Yeah.
Well, because I noticed he showed up right after they said there was a cop killed, and I was like, wait, are they trying to say he did it? So I just wanted to make sure.
So Jane leaves, and so it's Corsac and Jane. They start talking about the investigation. Jane is worried about it because Mara can't lie, and Corsac suggests that Jane calls Mara to warn her about the investigation. Go
ahead. For not being guilty, they are sure acting like they're guilty.
Because they know that they're in trouble. I mean, first of all, they've known for 2 years that Mara was Patrick's biological daughter, and they didn't tell anyone. They knew that Doyle was in town. They didn't tell anyone. They didn't act on it. They didn't try to bust him. They knew all of these things. And they even told an FBI agent who didn't do anything about it. So, yeah, they're kind of guilty. Not that they're dirty, but they certainly bent the rules and didn't completely break them.
Not to mention, in the first season, I wouldn't be surprised if either Jane or Corsac actually called Doyle to take care of Tommy O'Rourke. I mean...
My personal theory is that it was Frost.
I would not have thought that.
They're guilty in their own special way.
So many shades of gray.
And we're not talking about the book.
Oh, see, now I can never be your special guest again because that image will never leave me. Thank you. I'm disgusted now.
Anyway, Kavanaugh starts walking by and defends Jane to the Internal Affairs, saying they're all clean. Right. So Jane is having trouble reaching Mar because Mar's not picking up the phone. And then in comes Dean. STD homeless righty ass guy. Okay, so...
First things first, what the fuck is up with his hair? Did they make him wear a wig?
No, that's just his hair. He has long hair. The actor has long hair.
It looked fake. I mean, like, the back was all choppy, and then, like, the front was just, no.
He's an unattractive man. What do you want? I mean, there's just no fixing that.
I guess that's it.
I agree with you on that one. And I'm the straight one, so I agree with you on that one. At least he looks cleaner.
He did not look as greasy. You have a point there.
Well, that's because he hadn't had a night full of sex from the last time. I mean, you kind of have to balance that out. Theoretically, one would be dirty the day after you've had a long night, which would make you look greasier.
True.
I mean, there's just some physics involved there, because it doesn't look like they took a shower and then went back to bed. Although Jane never looks like she understands the concept of a brush, so take that as you will.
She doesn't shave, remember? Why do we have bad images in our head? This is not good. We're just getting deeper and deeper in this hole. We just can't get out. So anyway, Jane's mad at Dean for revealing their encounter. And then Dean says, well, how can you explain spending the night in your bed? I was like, oh my god, you're such an asshole. So then Dean admits that he was there to follow Mara, you know, to get to Doyle. I was like, ding, 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 figure that out. Since last season. Oh shit, Sherlock. So of course, Jane's upset about that and feels used and saying that, oh, you want to be the hero while you don't look, yeah, heroic to me, and walks away.
You know, I was pleasantly surprised by that. Like, I was actually really excited to see that Jane had been written so that she actually had anger toward Dean instead of being like, oh, you knew already? Okay, well, I love you and everything is fine. Like, I'm really happy that she was just like, piss off and walked away. Because that's how it should have been. I was really paranoid that it was going to be like 2 seconds of rawr, I'm mad at you, and then the rest of it of, oh, I love you and I'll forgive you in the end.
Which we totally get later.
Well, we kind of get it later, but it's a goodbye kiss.
I hope so.
But it's not a stay the fuck away, don't ever call me again kiss.
No, it's a I understand what happened and I'm going to eventually be able to forgive you, but I obviously can't trust you in another life, at another time maybe, but not now. That's what that kiss is.
I'm going to be the pessimist here and say that he will show up again. That was not a goodbye kiss.
Well, no, it's a goodbye for now kiss. And he probably will show up again, but at least she's not pregnant, knock on wood, right now.
Oh, God.
Because that's what happens in the books. They have one night together and she gets knocked up and they get married.
Ugh, yikes.
Well, I mean, they just had sex yesterday.
Yeah, so it would be yesterday.
So we got more episodes. Oh, God. No, nope, not going to go there. I don't want to be like episode 6 and be like, oh no! Why? You know? Like, why is she sick?
She suddenly gets the flu in one of the episodes.
Well, we'll know what to look for.
She's gaining weight. You're like, no! Anyway.
Weird cravings.
Weird cravings. She craves for pickles. So we head to the hospital, and Mara is with Constance, and Constance wants to know why.
Constance.
Ah! See?
Constance is a letter. Constance is the mother of Mora Isles.
I'm not the only one that hears these things, Jay.
I mean, go for it, though. I mean, you know, it's your thing. If you need to put an interesting spin on someone's name, that's a good way to go with it.
Oh, so we found another word. Okay, so Mara's mother wants to know... wants to know why Mara didn't tell her finding out about Dole. And Mara's like, well, would you have taken me if you know that I was related to Doyle?
She says, you're our daughter. We raised you. You're ours.
And I think that's a good reminder for Mara, because for some reason she has gotten stuck on the fact that Doyle is her biological father. He's not a father figure.
Well, that's because he keeps showing her this side of himself to make her feel like he's some type of misunderstood good guy who's out doing good in the world but can't do it legally.
So basically he's the assassin with the heart of gold.
Exactly, and that's what she's choosing to believe. So she's trying to latch on to what she thinks might be family, because she's never felt like she was part of a family. Obviously Constance and her and husband have been very aloof for Mora, and so Mora is constantly trying to find family. Far be it for her to consider that she might be part of the Rizzoli clan, given everyone who lives with her. That's what she's doing. She's looking for family. She's looking for a connection. And Doyle is giving it to her, and he's feeding it to her in little tiny bits to build up her trust, to make her feel like he is somebody that she can trust, probably to use her later, because he is a mob boss. That's what he does.
That's a very good point.
That's what's just beautiful. Tears. Oh my god. No, that was really good. I mean, you can't blame her because she never had that family and she's looking for it. That's why she's looking for her dad, and she's looking for her biological mother. She wants that so bad. And I really wish that they have an episode where you actually see her adopted father. Because there's a part of me that wants to know, is he alive or is he dead?
No, he's alive. He's always in a different country, because they always ask where he is. He's in a dig somewhere, because he's an archaeologist. But yes, I would love to see him too. And I don't think that, I don't think that's going to happen this season. I don't get that impression.
Me neither. Which is kind of unfortunate, because I would love to see how he's doing. And does he know about Mara and her mother getting closer?
Well, and here's a better question. If my wife had been hit by a car and was in a hospital and barely able to move around, why would I still be at my archaeology dig? Why would I not have my happy butt on a plane flying to Boston to be with my wife and my child?
Exactly. Thank you. I'm glad
Thank you.
That.
That's the first
that
thing I thought
no
about.
That makes no sense at all. If my daughter was in danger and my wife saved her life and jumped in front of a car to save her life and is now in a hospital and she's now been on the news, my daughter has been on the news and been linked to a mob boss, why am I not in Boston helping my family?
The only thing that I could come up with trying to justify why the writers have not fixed this was, one, how long has it been since Mara's mom got hit?
Like 2 days?
Maybe a couple of days. Yeah.
A couple of days. So maybe he's at a dig. For some reason, they don't have like a signal or a satellite phone, so they have to drive out to get him. And he's got to book a flight, which Australia to Boston is what, 22 hours, something like that?
Roundabout.
So maybe he's like mid-flight right now.
Even still, there should be some mention father is on his way or something, anything. And instead we get nothing. Nothing at all. I mean, it really bothers me a lot. It's a gigantic plot hole.
Because it doesn't seem like he's ever going to be in any other episodes.
If he didn't come back for his wife getting hit, he's never coming back.
So then Angela walks in, which, by the way, we mentioned this. Amanda forgot, but we mentioned this in the finale. It would be interesting. It would have been better if Angela was at the hospital, considering she's really close to Mara's mother. And that was last year. We said that last year. And it just so happened when I saw Angela walk in with flowers, I was like, finally, we wanted this scene and we finally got it. So I was really happy to see Angela was there and being supported. I thought that was really sweet and cute. So, yeah.
And it actually made sense rather than just not having her there at all.
Because the mother-in-law, they got to stick together. After that scene, because that's all they show, they show her walking in. We go to the crime scene, and it's Jane, Frankie, Corsack, and Frost. They're looking around for clues. And then Dr. Pike is there because Mara is at the hospital. She's away.
I have to say that the actor that plays Pike does a really good job playing him, because you're like, oh my god, this guy is a total idiot. And it's just, it's perfect.
He's there, and he thinks Jane is doubting his expertise. He's like, I do this way. I don't know how Mara does it. So Jane, like, sort of flirts to get her way.
She uses her feminine wiles on him.
She does. It's true.
He's like, really? Oh, okay.
And then, like, I was really confused. I loved that.
I know. Frost looked at her like, what the fuck is happening?
So they're still talking about it, and it's Jane and Corsack. They don't think it's a robbery. That's their big thing. Even Frost looks at their surveillance and he says something is just not right about the whole situation.
Guy that shot them was trying to get the money out of the cash register and he couldn't get the cash register open. Who can't get a cash register open? Come on.
Me, because I'm an angel and I don't do that.
No, oh, whatever. You push one button, it makes the drawer go ding.
So we head to the hospital, and it's Angela and Mara. They're walking down the hallway. And so Mara tells her what's going on between her and Jane, and she blames her adrenaline for yelling at Jane. And Angela says, well, you can't blame who you love. And Mara thinks she's talking about Doyle. She's like, I don't love Doyle. And I'm like, no! She's talking about Jane!
How much do we love Angela? Is she not the captain of the ship on this show?
She is.
At this point?
She steers that boat like no other.
I believe it. I do. But the scene was also sad, because after she says that she offers to hug Mara, Mara says no, that she's used to being alone and she's not very good at handling emotions, because her mother was always standoffish, and so she doesn't know how to deal. She'll be fine on her own. And that's really sad and kind of pathetic.
It is. I thought it was it was cold on Mara's part too, because when you're turning somebody's offer of comfort away, you're also, I mean, that's kind of dissing the person that's trying to comfort you as well.
But Angela says that Maura and Jane are a lot alike because Jane doesn't like to hug either and used to wiggle out of her lap when she tried to be comforted, when Angela tried to comfort her as a child. I think that this might have been Janet trying to show a parallel between Maura and Jane to show how much alike they are despite all of their differences, like how they handle situations and how they handle issues. Does that make sense?
No, that makes total sense because that's what I was thinking while I was watching it. But I don't know. I found it a bit inconsistent because Maura and Angela have hugged before.
And they hug in that episode. And Angela has hugged Jane. And Jane and Maura hug all the time. Yeah, no, again, there's no consistency.
But yeah, I that was really sad to see her say she's used to being alone, and she felt... I at that moment, I wish I could have just, like, went through the screen and just, like, I don't care that you don't want to be hugged, but I'm just going to hug you. It's okay. Because it was just so sad. I was just sitting there like, nope, this is just my allergies. I'm not crying. Nope, that's just stupid. That's just dorky. Like, it was just so sad, because Mara's my favorite character. I don't know if you guys know that. And to see her hurt, it just breaks my heart. I just can't take it.
Because every time Maura cries, a lesbian loses a mullet. It's true. We all have to rush to her side and pet her and tell her it's going to be okay. It will be okay. Oh God, please don't cry. Whatever you need, whatever you want, we'll get it for you. Just don't cry.
We head to the crime scene. Korsak tells Jane to go to the hospital to warn Maura about internal affair guys, and that if she should do that because they're starting to look dirty. We head to the hospital again. It keeps going back and forth. Jane tries to warn Maura. Maura, like, actually stands up and apologizes. She's like, I'm really sorry for what I did. Jane just kept talking and didn't really apologize. I was like, oh, just say I'm sorry right quick, and then you can say what you gotta say. Because if you just say I'm sorry too, but, like, we should do this, then I'm like, whew. They'll probably work on not hating each other, but she just kept going, and she's like, she didn't apologize, so she just starts talking about the investigation, and of course Mara's like, that's the reason why you're here? You're not gonna apologize or say, I'm sorry that I shot your father and my father's dying, or anything like that? And she's like, no.
No, but she's right. Jane is right. Why should she apologize for shooting a mobster? The head of a mob. Why? Why would she apologize for that? She was protecting Frost and Dean and everyone else in that room by shooting Patrick Boyle. Why would she be sorry about that? She was doing her job.
Exactly. In Jane's mind, there is nothing to be sorry about.
Of course, the Eternal guys, the killer, sees them, and he's all angry. He's very angry. I mean, if you didn't know if he was a killer, then were you 90? Like, I don't understand how you can figure it out. But anyway, he's, like, mad at Jane. Like, you're not supposed to be talking to each other because you're under investigation. And Maura actually lies. She says, Jane didn't warn me about anything. She's here to ask about my father. And I was like, she's lying! She's lying!
We caught her in a lie.
For someone who can't lie, it came out pretty easily.
That came out really easy. No hives. She didn't even faint. Nothing. I was like, ha-ha, you think I didn't catch that? Come on. So the Eternal Affairs guys tells Jane and Maura that they can't talk to each other because of the investigation. And so after that happened, like, Jane walks away, and she looks back at Maura, and then Maura looks at Jane, and I'm like, So then the guy, the Internal Affairs guys, interviews Maura about Doyle, and you could tell they just kept asking questions, and she was just having a hard time telling the truth. Which, I mean, a few seconds ago she just lied. So how could she have? I don't get it.
I guess she did, didn't she? Because she told them that Jane came to ask her about her father, right? Isn't that what she said?
Yes.
See, what did I tell you about lack of consistency?
You were correct.
It's kind of funny. She said, "Oh, Jane." I mean, with ease. Oh, Jane's here to ask about my father. I was like, that's a lie. But
yeah, there's no way to even stretch the truth to make that the truth. No.
So before she can not lie, I guess, the surgeon comes and saves the day and says that they can see Doyle. So we enter Doyle's room, and the Eternal Affairs guy's talking about a book, which has the list of dirty cops. And they think Jane is on that list. So Mara...
Yeah, basically anybody that's worked for Doyle and has been paid off by Doyle and all that stuff.
So Maura defends Jane, which is great because even though they're fighting, they still defend each other, which that happens throughout the episode. And right. Then she says, if our friendship is hurting Jane, blame me because it's not her. I was like, oh, this is just so sweet, Mark. So then Doyle grabs the guy, which, I mean, if you could have a more obvious clue, if you still don't know he's the killer, what? I mean, come on.
It does a close-up, blurry image, which I'm assuming they're trying to do it from Doyle's point of view, of the cop or the internal affairs captain's badge, and then Doyle like freaks out and grabs his wrist. So you know there's something fishy about the captain. It's obvious.
Well, by that time they're dropping hints, and I mean, I say this in quotation marks. They're dropping hints because if you were smart, you figured it out as soon as you walked on screen. But now they're just pounding it into your head that this is the bad guy.
Exactly.
They want you to know at this point.
It's the proverbial anvil on your head.
Exactly.
And he kept calling Mara, and he said, don't touch her, don't touch her. And he's still, like, even on his, well, it's not his deathbed because he's still alive. Even in his hospital bed, he's protecting his daughter. So we head to Mara's place, and Angela's making tea. And Jane sneaks in on the side door, and she's like, is Mara here? Like, she's whispering. And just like, why are we whispering?
It was cute the way that Jane sneaked in, though.
Right.
It was, yeah.
So this is my favorite scene with Angela. I love the banter back and forth between Angela and Jane. And Angela's making tea, and she says that it, or Mara said that it was flavored by pandas. And Jane just like, how was it flavored by pandas? And it was the panda fertilizer. I was like, oh, that's so wrong. And then Angela's face when Jane goes, they use panda poop, Mom.
And it's just like, oh.
As the Lion King says, it's the circle of life.
Exactly. So Angela even talks about, remember your friend Becky, which I'm guessing is a childhood friend,
right.
And how Jane thought they would never be friends again. And Jane's like, but I didn't shoot Becky's dad. So.
You know, for somebody who doesn't regret shooting Doyle because Doyle is a bad guy, Jane keeps saying over and over again, but I shot my best friend's dad. What happened to he's only a sperm donor? Like, when did we lose sight of that particular fact?
I guess we lost sight of it when Mars is upset about it. I think if Mara was not upset and didn't make a big deal about it, then she wouldn't mention it as Jane wouldn't mention it as much.
I guess.
We lose sight of it any time that Jane and Mara aren't in an argument and Jane can use it to her advantage. Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, I can go with that.
So Angela at this point is trying to comfort Jane with a hug, and Jane's like, I don't want to be hugged. No, don't hug me. So poor Angela, she just wants a hug. I will hug you, Angela. Come on.
I know.
Come here. Come here, Angela. Come here. Oh, yep, there we go. You see, it's fine. It's okay. I hugged you. It's totally good.
Angela's just trying to be a good mom. She's trying to comfort her daughter. She was rejected when she tried to hug Mara. So in a way, she's also trying to make up for that by hugging Jane too, which Jane rejects her again.
That's okay. She already got hugged. I already hugged her. She's totally fine. She's good. Angela says, Oprah says the best way to perk you up is to think of three good things. So Jane's like, well, I'm not Wally. You stop hugging me. And
size isn't 11.
Her shoe size isn't 11, right. So then Jane walks around and sees a frame of a drawing, which, I mean, every time there's, like, an object that they focus on, you're like, it's a clue, it's a clue, it's a clue.
It's like Blue's Clues.
I was waiting for the blue prop print. And, like, Steve comes in and be like, where is it?
And then there's, like, a little song and dance, right?
Blue's Clues, Blue's Clues.
And then we can go sit on our thinking chair and think.
With our handy dandy notepad.
Yes. And maybe the salt and pepper shakers can come in and help us out with our clues.
And Mara could come in like a magenta jacket.
Oh, yeah. Mara comes in with her magenta jacket. Jane comes in wearing blue. Perfect.
We just figured out Blue's Clues because we're really smart. Anyway. Angela says she loves it, and it's because Mara's mom, one of her students, drew it. Jane says she walks around to the couch and said her life is awful, and so Angela comes by and pats her knees. She acts as like, since I can't hug you, can I pat your knee? which is really sweet and cute.
And she goes pat crazy. I was cracking up. She was patting Jane's knee like she wanted, like, with all the love that she wanted to hug her with.
It was cute. That was a cute mother-daughter moment.
So Angela goes on and saying her and Frank used to have a marriage counselor, and she's trying to use a method to solve Jane and Mara's friendship. Jane's like, well, Mara and I are not a couple. And I was like, ha, 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 yet.
Yeah, but Angela doesn't say, oh, I know, honey, but still this is helpful, or anything like that. Instead, she just says, I'm going to hug you until you tell me how you first met Mara. Because Angela is clearly the queen of the shippers on the show.
Angela is the type, she sees this relationship between her daughter and this girl, where she just wants them to be happy together, and so she's going to push them together. She's like one of those meddling mothers that...
She is a meddling mother, but I would think that she would want her daughter to be happy with her best friend, and her daughter also find a nice guy. Exactly. But I don't know. There's just something about comparing your daughter's relationship with her best friend to you and your husband and a marriage counselor that kind of screams subtext to me.
It was subtext that actually became text.
Yeah, because you would think she would probably want to relate it to one of her friends.
Right. Like, my friend, I don't know, my friend and I from high school had a problem and blah, blah, blah. No. We compare Jane and Mara to marriage. And people wonder why we scream lesbians.
A flashback happens. This is the third, fourth. There's a lot of flashbacks. But this one was about how Jane and Mara met. So Jane is at the cafe at the headquarters, and she's dressed up as a hooker.
So she was talking about when you're in the drug unit and you're doing a bus, if you're a female, you're a hooker.
So she's dressed up in this getup, which it was so hard not to tell Amanda about this spoiler, because like, I've seen the pictures and I've read the interviews, and I was just like, oh my god, I can't wait for her to see it. And I remember you get the text, you're like, oh my god, Jane's a hooker. And I was just like, yep, she is. I knew about it for months, but you finally can see it, so... Anyway.
That's fantastic, guys.
Jane, she was starving. She didn't have any cash on her or an ID, and all she wanted was coffee and a donut. And so she's fighting with Stanley. Anyway, Mara tried to help Jane. She's trying to give her some money. I like how she puts on a glove first and then trying to give her money.
I'm watching Mara, and she's at the end of the counter, and she's, like, making her coffee or whatnot, and she walks up to Jane with a glove and a $20 bill. I'm like, when did she put the glove on?
When she reached in her purse.
It was hilarious, just the fact that she has to put a glove on to hand Jane a $20 bill, you know, because she might be contagious.
And so it seems like Mara actually thinks Jane is an actual hooker.
Really, yeah, funny. I thought that too, but I was like, that would be a bit unusual considering it's a police station.
She could have been arrested and got out of bail or something.
Okay, true. And she just decided to go and beg food.
Yeah.
At the cafe.
It's a valid point.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree.
So Jane doesn't want her money. And she's like, move. Like, she's being rude to Mara.
No, what does she say? She tells her that she can get her non-fat latte in a minute.
Yeah. And even Mara's like, actually, you should probably consider having plain yogurt and green leafy vegetables, considering your night work. Like,
because of her vitamin D deficiency.
Exactly. And I forgot what Jane said afterwards. She said something, and she's like, well, I don't have a heart. A hooker doesn't have a heart. How does it go?
Not all hookers have a heart of gold, honey.
Sister. She goes, not all
sister. Yeah, yeah, sister.
And Mara goes, apparently not, sister.
That's something I would never thought. Like, I always wanted to know how they would meet for the first time. I would have never thought this would be how they met. I thought it would be a whole different way, like a case or something. But that was different. I kind of liked it.
Yes, I agree. I thought it was a good scene. And it brought out both their personalities on the first meeting, you know.
So we go back to present day. Angela and Jane are laughing. And while they're laughing, Mara walks in and asks why Jane is there and that she can't be there because of the investigation. Jane wants to know what Mara said to them, and Mara's like, I can't tell you. So Jane's like, she tells her mom, go pack her things. And I was like, oh. And I called it too, Amanda. I called it on the podcast.
I just said I didn't remember that we talked about that on the podcast since it was like 7 months ago.
I called it. I said I wouldn't be surprised if Angela has to leave the guest house. Anyway.
I thought it was childish, though, of Jane to demand that Angela pack her bags.
It was, and that was the point, is that Jane and Maura are having a childish fight. They're bickering back and forth about everything except what they actually should be fighting about. And this is just one more way of Jane marking her territory about where the borders are going to be regarding their friendship and the people that they know. Because really, what that episode is setting up is the next episode, they're not done fighting yet. So lines are still being drawn. And what does Angela tell Maura? Angela tells Maura, I'll just be gone a couple of days. I love you like a daughter too. Don't worry about it. So Angela's not planning to stay with Jane forever. And I think that Angela thinks that after Jane cools down and gets tired of her in 2 or 3 days, she'll go back to the guest house.
We have the revelation. Well, if he wasn't on Twitter, but we have the revelation that Jane's middle name is Clementine. Never would have got that. Jane Clementine Rizzoli. Mara's like, telling Angela you don't have to leave. And this is what made me mad at Jane. She's like, oh, so your family screwed up, now you need mine? And I was like, ugh!
Yeah, that was a low blow.
Why would you say that? That's just so mean. And then she said, blood is thicker than water. She's water, I'm blood. I was like, just, what are you doing? I'm sorry, I would have slapped her. Two slaps, right there. So, Angela says, she says she's going to get some things, and she looks at the drawing, which, again, it reminds me of that Destiny blanket and the roofing nail. I bet you Tommy's fingerprints is all on the drawing.
As long as it's just his fingerprints and not anything else from Tommy, I'm okay with that.
Oh, why did you have to go there? So yeah, Mara gives the drawing, and like you said before, you like my daughter too, and they hug. And so Angela got her hug. She got a hug from Mara, which was really, that was really sweet. I thought that was so sweet that she's like, you're like my daughter. Oh, I'm okay. So we head to Jane's apartment, and Jane's sleeping in bed, and then you see a hand. And I know who the hand belonged to, because, once again, I read some spoilers. But for a split second, I was like, that was only Mara's hand. Just for a second. But I knew it was Angela. And Angela wakes Jane up, and Jane's like, what are you doing in bed? And kicks her out. And then Angela's like, I left my comfortable bed in the guest house for you to be mean to me. And then Jane tries to call her back, and she grabs her pillow and starts screaming into it, and I thought that was hilarious.
That was pretty funny.
Once again, the three nice things came up again. So Jane said she found all her lids for her Tupperware. She doesn't have leprosy. And she loved that her mom stayed in her crappy apartment and that she loves her daughter and stuff like that. And I thought that was really cute. So Angela comes back, tries to hug Jane. Jane's like, no hugging. And I love this part. And she's like, and this is what you say, I don't think your apartment is crappy. And Angela's like,
Yeah. She looks around and she's like, No. My thing with Jane calling her apartment crappy and little is, one, her apartment's bigger than my house. Two, yeah, it's not a crappy little apartment. That's probably like hundreds of thousands of dollars for that apartment. That is a nice apartment.
In Boston.
No, it is a nice apartment. I agree with you. I see nothing wrong with her place.
At all. I would love to live in that apartment.
Yeah.
It's neat. A. B. It's very, I like how the colors and stuff and contrast and stuff like that.
Yeah, because Jane's is a very pleasing palette. It's got a lot of neutral colors in it, and there isn't a lot of pomp and circumstance in her apartment. It's a very down-to-earth, this is a regular kind of person who's worked hard to get whatever it is that she's accumulated in her apartment. So nothing matches, but everything looks good together. I mean, it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's a comfortable place.
It is.
It's a home.
It's a home.
Crappy apartment. What? That guest house has got to be a palace then. I'm sorry. I mean, huh. Same, but that'd be a crappy apartment. Wow. So anyway, Jane goes in the kitchen and she sees Frankie there eating breakfast, and she's like, what are you doing here? And apparently he eats breakfast every time he has like a night shift. And so he's like, I can't believe you let her sleep on that couch. And she's like, well, where were you when Dad was leaving and she had no place to stay? I was like, yeah, where were you, buddy? Where's your place? I would love to see your crappy apartment.
For all we know, Frankie lives under a bridge.
True story. We've never seen where he lives.
Never.
I'm just saying, maybe he didn't have room for Angela in his cardboard box.
Frankie and Jane banter, and she steals Frankie's omelet. And then...
Very ladylike of her, too, to take a huge bite out of it, too.
I know, like, in her hand. Like, it's like a taco. Like, what do you do?
She's like, om nom nom.
There's a knock on the door, and there is Dean again.
He's like a bad singing telegram that won't stop following you around.
He's like a gnat that just won't leave you alone. Dean comes by with flowers trying to apologize, and Jane's like, oh, thanks, it throws it away. And then Andrew's like, Jane? Clement's just like, don't you say it. Love that part. Jane walks out the door and is still mad at Dean, which I was happy about. Mm-hmm. And they start talking in the hallway. And Dean reveals that Doyle was wired and that Jane is being set up. So then he starts talking about, I think he started talking about the book, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's when he tells Jane that they're looking for a book.
And that he has to go back to Washington. And so he's like, I wish, and then she's like, yeah, I wish too. And then kisses his cheek. And I'm like, what are you doing?
I know.
She's saying goodbye. That's the kiss. The one I was talking about where I said, that's the kiss goodbye for now. That's what that is. If things could have been different, if, then maybe. But you screwed up and I don't trust you anymore. So I will see you around. That's what that kiss is.
Until the finale where we have sex again and I screw up everything. I just don't want them to follow the books. That's all I ask. Just don't.
Well, they're already not following the books. Casey is not an option in the books. And by now, if we were following the books, Maura would be having an affair with a priest. So I think we're good.
Okay.
I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Okay.
Unless they suddenly decide to follow the books.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Because they know no one's going to be watching that. So then we head back to the headquarters, and this is really funny. Frost and Corsac, they're bickering about eating donuts. He's like, I thought you just quit eating jelly donuts. And Corsac, like, what are you, a girl with my diet? And they start talking about, yeah, if you keep eating like that, you're not going to be able to see your balls. And he's like, I don't need to see my balls. And I was like, okay, what the hell?
That was interesting, because when I was worried when they switched to 9 o'clock that they were going to edit some of that back and forth out, and I was like, okay, worry's totally not an issue here now, since they had a discussion about balls, but okay.
So yeah, we're safe.
So Kavanaugh comes in and is worried that if Corsac and Frost and all them are found guilty and found that if they're guilty of being dirty cops, that all the past convictions will sort of, like, be dismissed. They go to Kavanaugh's office, and they start talking about Doyle and saying that his father threatened Doyle about Mara and Hope, like, to threaten their lives. And if he would have known that Mara and Hope was alive, they would have been dead. He would have killed them. Anyway, so we head to the morgue, and Dr. Pike is there, and they just want the bullet. That's all they want. Dr. Pike is giving them a hard time. So Jane, once again, flirts with him to get her way.
Oh, God. And Frost looks at her like, what? He's like, what just happened there?
So Pike gets the bullet, and they start teasing him about the size of the bullet or something like that.
Well, no, he was going to use forceps to get the bullet out. And Jane goes, aren't you going to use your fingers? And then Frost goes, yeah, forceps leave, what did he say, groove marks? And he's like, of course I was going to use my fingers. Oh, Pike, you're an idiot.
Yeah, so they get the bullet, and they're going to go, and Frost is going to ballistics to analyze it. So while this is going on, Jane sees Mara in Mara's office. So we head to Mara's office, and I love this scene. But okay, Mara asks Jane about this book. Have you returned her soothing pink choices for the home?
I know. When she said that, I was like, I bet you she recommended it to Jane, and Jane was too nice to say no thank you, so she just took the book and kept it for a week and then gave it back.
And Jade's like, yeah, I returned it. And Mara's like, that's weird because I can't find it. And so Jade's like, well, have you returned my Guns of the World Digest? It's like they're having an argument of borrowing things, which I thought it was funny. And Mara's like, I always return things that are borrowed.
Yeah, but then she goes, you probably lost it.
She's like, you always lose things all the time. I was like, oh my gosh. And then she's like, have Dr. Pike sit in my chair? And he walks in, he's like, you called me? He's like, and Jade's like, Dr. Pike, have you been eating Mars porridge? And he's like, of course not. I'm like, no, they're joking. No.
The reference went over his head.
And Mars like, oh, you think you're really funny, huh? And so then they start fighting. So it's like, Jade's like, I'd rather be funny than Point Dexter the know-it-all. And Mara's like, I'd rather be Point Dexter the know-it-all than the hoi polloi. And she's like, oh, very funny. Like Jade.
Yeah, and then Mara goes, you don't even know what that means.
And Dr. Pike's like, it actually means common.
No, he goes, yeah, literal translation is the great unwashed.
And Jade's like, ooh, you insulted me in Latin. And Mara's like, actually, it's Greek. And Jade's like, oh, the geek that knows Greek. And she's like, you know how ridiculous that sounds? Like, do you know that everyone laughs behind your back? And Mara's like, do you know everyone calls you a bitch behind yours? And I was like, oh, oh, in the gut, oh. And Jade's like, well, at least when my father gets mad, he doesn't stab people with an ice pick. And Mara's like, well, at least my father didn't leave with a floozy that works at a pizza parlor. Or was it a massage parlor?
They're just like one shot after another. Jab, jab, uppercut.
Right. Jay's like, ooh, look at you, trailer trash Snooki. And Mara's like, I only saw that shit one time. And it was for ethnographic research. And I was done. I was on the floor laughing my ass off.
It was really well done.
And while this is going on, Pike is videotaping.
Is he video conferencing with somebody?
I think so. I don't know who. It wasn't me, but it was pretty funny. Kavanaugh comes in and stops the fight. And then The killer comes in and basically says, what's going on? There's a cat fight here. And Jay's like, really? Really? You just called two female co-workers fighting a cat fight? And then Mara's like, actually, the term for it. She's like, oh, for Pete's sake, stop it. The killer suggests that Jade should be on leave. And Kavanaugh says, well, I got a better idea. You're going to evidence management. I'm taking you off of homicide. And they both were like, what?
And Mara even was going to get mad on Jane's behalf for her being transferred out of homicide, which I was like, oh, they're still friends. They're just fighting. That's all.
And then there was also a moment where Jane like leaves. She looks at Mara and she leaves. And then Dr. Pike's like, well, what about Mara? She was part of the cat fight too. And then Jane pushes Dr. Pike. Mara goes into her bag and she's quitting basically. She gives her
letter of resignation. If I didn't know it was already coming because of the promos and the previews, I would have flipped out right there.
Me too!
See, okay, coming from someone who didn't know what happened, I was like, oh, she resigned. Well, her name's still in the title, so she's going to be in the show somehow, I don't care.
It was random. Like, there was no reason behind why she resigned. It was just, I'm mad at Jane, I'm resigned.
But in my mind, I thought maybe she was resigning because of the whole it getting out that she is Patty Doyle's daughter, and now that Jane is under investigation, she thought maybe it would take some of the heat off of Jane.
But that actually makes it look like she's guilty.
Exactly.
Okay, true.
That makes it look like, oh, I need to quit my job before they figure stuff out. So that makes her look guilty.
It was a dramatic gesture.
So we get to Mara's place. Mara walks in and sees her place got... Well, it wasn't robbed, but it looked like it was.
Because it's ransacked.
Everything... All her things are everywhere. She did a smart thing, though. She did a very smart thing. She saw it, and then she went back out. That's what you're supposed to do. Don't stay in the place. And the police arrive, and Korsak asks about the book. And Mara's like, yeah, the killer asks about the book, too. Frankie says, well, Patty Doyle is alive. He could just name the dirty cops. And Korsak says, Doyle will never testify. and that whoever has the book can control Boston. Which, the way he said that to Tamara, like, if you have the book, you can control Boston. And I was like, are they setting up something? Are they setting up something? Can Mara be, like, the next in line of this mobster throne?
She's going to be the next godfather.
Yes. Korsak defends Jane and says that Jane didn't know that Dean would be there, and asks what's the reason for her quitting her job. And that's when she says it's because the fact that she's Doyle's daughter, everyone else is in investigation. Okay, so we head to the evidence. I'm guessing this is evidence lab or garage, say. Jane is bored out of her mind. She's, like, messing up this person's desk and everything. So this guy comes up and tells her that she has to, like, destroy some guns, like, disarm them.
Right.
So Frost walks in, and he's like, oh, that sucks that you have to destroy this, I don't know, was it a 44?
It was a 45 caliber, but I can't remember the name of the gun.
And so she's like, I wish I could sneak it out. Ask Frost, can you sneak it out in your pants? He's like, there's no room to fit it. Ha ha ha. Anyway, so Jane feels like she feels like she needs to shoot something. She needs to shoot some guns. So they take the guns. They're like, we're just going to leave and, you know, test these guns out. So they go to this shooting lab, I guess you could say.
It's to test ballistics. So what it is a giant iron holding tank full of water, and they shoot into the water.
So at this point, Skype decided it was going to be a bitch and would not let us continue the podcast with Liv. Unfortunately, we were having so much fun, so with so many technical difficulties, we decided we had to carry on so we could get this out as soon as possible for you guys.
Yes, it's like those war documentaries, and they're like, go on without me.
Yeah, poor Liv is like, leave me behind.
Thank you, Liv, for joining us. Maybe next time it wouldn't be so bad. Or we'll find another way to do this.
And hopefully this has not scared her away from podcasting with us in the future.
Right. Oh, you see, her last thing was about ballistics.
Yes. Oh, okay. Liv was explaining the tank. And what did she ended with?
It stops.
You shoot the bullets into this big tank of water so that you can retrieve the bullets. And from there, you can compare the grooves left on the bullet to determine which gun the bullet was fired from.
So they start, Jane, while they were doing this, Jane was talking about internal affairs guys and teasing him, saying, I can't believe he called it a cat fight and all this stuff. And so when they got one of the bullets, they found out that that bullet matches with the bullet that killed Wally, and that the gun she was holding was the weapon. Which, by the way, I was like, if that's the case, why are you not wearing gloves? Now that's evidence. She's just like carrying the gun like, yep, my fingerprints are all on it. And I'm like, that's the weapon that, okay.
I can only assume that it's already been fingerprinted, maybe.
I wouldn't even touch a thing. If I would have found that, I'd be like, crap. Because she shot with the gun, number one. Number two, after she figured it out, she was still waving the gun. Like, and I'm like, dude, that's the killer's gun. Come on, use some gloves. But whatever. And they started to figure out that the killer must work at the headquarters. I was like, yeah, we figured this out already. Anyway, so we head to Kavanaugh's office. Kavanaugh reveals to Jane that he put her there on purpose, because an angry Jane can solve the case. So
yes. I thought it was well played, Kavanaugh. Well played.
Well played. Oh, and if you haven't known now, he's a regular on the show, so we're probably going to see him in every single episode from now on.
That's okay. Kavanaugh has grown on me, like mold.
Yes, he's grown on me too. But don't eat it, because you might have to go to an ambulance. Okay, so
what? You're not to say that.
So we headed to Wally's house, and it's Kavanaugh, Frost, Jane, and Korsak, and they're looking for clues. They're looking around, and there's like a display of guns and everything. And Jane picks up a picture, and behind the picture, there is a wall with a hole in it. She goes and takes it apart, and she sees all this cash. So then Kavanaugh finds a picture of a young Doyle and Wally
as altar boys.
So then we head back to the evidence garage, and the deal was the cops would seize the guns, and then the bad cops would give those guns to Doyle, and then Doyle will sell them. Jane starts mentioning Dean, saying Dean said something about that, and Carfinette's like, I don't want to know what you guys are doing while you were discussing this. And Frost's like, I want to know. They're going through these barrels because they're trying to find the guns that were seized. Instead, Jane finds a body. That would have scared the crap out of me, too. I'd have been like, I'd have ran so fast, helped the place, and just kept on running. Like Forrest Gump, I would just kept on running.
My question is, though, I'm assuming that they were all supposed to be melted down, but if the barrels weren't melted down fast enough, wouldn't the body start to smell? And that would be a dead giveaway.
I'm starting to learn we should just stop trying to figure out.
Stop asking questions, just go with it.
So, of course, the internal affairs guy comes in and he's all angry, like, what are you guys doing here? And so he comes by and he sees his partner, who he killed, in the canister, and suggests that they return everything back to where it was.
The reason he said to leave everything where it was is to not tip off the killers if something was moved.
So Jane wants to know where the guns are. So she figures out that the guns are in Doyle's case box. So she opens the box and she sees this file in 1976. And she sees a picture of a woman, same woman that was in the drawing, at a cemetery.
It looked like it was taken from like a 12 megapixel camera. It had digital black and white settings, so you could just automatically set it to black and white. I mean,
it was too perfect. It should have been sort of this grainy looking yellowish tint type of picture, because you get, when you look at old pictures, you can sort of tell what, without even knowing the year, if someone didn't tell you the year it was taken, you can sort of tell when it was taken because of the way it was looked.
Another giveaway, though, was the hair. The hairstyle was totally from 2012.
Okay, it's a Terminator storyline. Basically, the mom had Mara in 2000, and she went back.
She stole the TARDIS and then went back and had Mara in the past. So when Mara meets her now, she's going to be the same age, right?
Right. Yeah, even her outfit didn't really seem... I didn't expect bell bottoms. I'm not saying that, but it was just... It just didn't seem it was a 70s type of picture. It just seemed like she just took it yesterday.
And made it black and white. And miraculously, we're supposed to think, oh yeah, the picture's from 1976. Because it's black and white.
Yeah, because people now doesn't take black and white pictures. Anyway, we head to... Jane figures it out. She goes to her place, back to her apartment. She asks her mom where's the drawing. She gets it, and then she puts it side by side, and she's like, oh my god, that's the same girl. So Jane runs out, and she goes to the hospital, and she goes to Doyle's room, and Mara's mom is there. And so Jane starts asking about the drawing. And so we find out that Mara's mom thought that Doyle was a student, and that he kept drawing this picture, and... The woman in the picture is Hope, is Mara's biological mother. And so Jane was like, so he left and he came by and then all of a sudden he was pregnant. She's like, no, Mara's not my biological daughter. But now we know why she knows Doyle. Because that was the big thing in the finale. We didn't know why. We're like, are they related of some sort? Like, what is going on? So now we know why. So she said a couple months later, Doyle came to her with a baby in his arms and just gave it to her and said that the mother died during childbirth. She said that Doyle's father would have killed Mara if he would have known that Mara was alive, because the father did not trust anyone at all. And the only person that Doyle trusted was Mara's mom. So then she also said that Hope and Doyle used to meet in the cemetery. It was a safe place from Doyle's father. And then when I was watching it, it just dawned on me and I was like, oh my god. Is this like a lame attempt to put this connection together? Mara is a medical examiner that deals with the dead, and they call her Dr. Death, and her biological parents met in a cemetery.
No. No, because the Dr. Death thing came from the books. They call her Dr. Death because she deals with the bodies.
They actually said that in one of the episodes.
Very first episode. Queen of the Dead or something like that.
I'm just saying,
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's out there. So if anyone of you guys listening and you agree with me, just tweet me. Anyway, so...
And if you don't agree with her, just tweet me.
So we head to the cemetery and we see a tombstone that has baby Mara Doyle, and Angela and Jane is there. She said Doyle told everyone that Mara and Hope died, and just like a parent would do anything to keep their child safe. And then she hugs Jane, and Jane doesn't retaliate. She stays with the hug, and then Angela kisses her on her forehead, and I was just like, oh, It was so cute. It was adorable. Oh, so then Jane is looking around the grave, and she moves the flowers, and Andrew's like, what are you doing? She's like, shh. And she digs in for a little bit, and she finds the book. The book that they've been looking for the whole episode. Cut to the hospital with the internal affairs guy, and he's with Doyle in Doyle's room. Jane walks in and gives him the book. There was a picture in the book, and she's like, huh, it seems like you're one of the dirty cops. He grabs Jane and slams her to the wall and has the gun, and he wears gloves. Ha ha, he gets the memo, wear gloves. Anyway, he wears gloves.
Well, he doesn't want his prints on the murder weapon for a second time.
She's like, well, my fingerprints are all on the gun, so how are you going to explain if you kill me? I don't know what his evil speech was. I totally wasn't paying attention to that part. But he grabs it and he pulls the trigger and nothing works. And Jane's like, oh yeah, I removed the firing pin. And so that's when Korsak and Frost comes in and they arrest him. And I was like, finally, we figured this out. Like, the first time we saw the dude, we're like, he's the killer. So then Mara walks in and she asks Doyle if he would have shot Jane. And he's like, yeah, I would have shot her because she's a cop. Which I was like, okay, either he's highly medicated because this is bullshit. He wouldn't have shot Jane. Well, I highly doubt it.
Why are you so adamant that he wouldn't have shot her? She had her gun on him. If he had the opportunity or the upper hand, he would have shot her.
Based on the shooting, if Dean wasn't there and it was just Jane and Frost, Doyle shoots the killer. That would have been it. And then Jane would have been like, please put down your gun. Because I don't believe Doyle would have killed Jane or shot Jane because based on the past two seasons, Doyle will say, I know you have some people in the police force that's very protective of you. He said that to Mara. He also said to Jane, he called Jane and said, protect my daughter. He's been not only been watching Mara, he's been watching Jane because, hello, Jane and Mara always hang out. So he knows that Jane would never hurt Mara. And why would he shoot the one person Mara is very close to? If he's so protective of Mara, why would he do that? Like, Mara would be like, oh, I totally forgive you for shooting Jane. Mara would never want to speak to him again. And if he wants a relationship with Mara, why would he do that?
You is it my turn now?
Anyway, Jane tells Mara to.
No! You had your say. Now I have my say. Okay, so that's not how it happened. I mean, obviously, Dean was there. Dean shot Doyle. If Doyle hadn't been so off kilter from being shot and Jane had stepped out and, you know, even if she had said, drop your weapon, he would have not hesitated at the opportunity to take her out because obviously he can't get away. I mean, he's wounded, so he's not going to be able to run. His only way to get out of this would be to shoot both Jane and Frost. So that, at least, yes, Mara's alive, but he's still free. I mean, when it comes down to Doyle versus Jane, obviously he's going to choose to save himself from going to prison over shooting a cop, which he's done before. So that's my say.
So after that, Jane tells Mara that she has to show her something. So we head back to the cemetery, and Mara's crying because she sees her own grave, which is kind of creepy, I might add. And she says she now knows why her biological mother never looked for her. On the grave, it has born August 7th, 1976. So now we know Mara's birthday. She's 35. And apparently, her birthday falls on the exact same day as this year's summer finale. So, I'm putting two together. Fingers crossed that we will have another birthday finale, but this time it will be Mara's birthday. It makes logical sense. They have to do it. I mean, come on. The finale date is exactly her birthday. If they don't do that, that is just a wasted opportunity. The odds of that happening again is slim to none. And maybe it's a clue for something. Maybe it's foreshadowing that something big is going to happen. Not only it's her birthday, but it's the finale. So maybe it's something huge, I would say. I'm guessing, I'm just saying a good birthday gift from Jane would be a kiss. That's all I'm saying.
A kiss.
Maybe some
sex. She's gonna hand her a thimble.
Or they can take that hot air balloon ride.
Hot air balloon ride. Jane would be like, no.
Just no. Jane has no, it's not her birthday. It's not Jane's birthday. It's Mara's birthday. So she has to do it for Mara. Jane asks Mara, what can she do? And Mara wants Jane to leave. And then so Jane walks away and she gets like a couple feet away. And Mara's like, wait. She's like, tell Pike I want my chair back. And then Jane walks away and she smiles. And I was like, yay, that means Mara's not going to quit her job. Woohoo! Like I was worried, but still. So that's the end of the episode.
So Jay, did you know hoi polloi is ancient Greek for the great unwashed? Synonyms for the phrase, the great unwashed, are things such as the plebeians, the rabble, or the peons.
I did not know that, but I do now. So what was your Gaydar ping?
My Gaydar ping was, she wants me, she wants me not. There was so much fighting going on in this episode that it's like, she wants me not, but she's going to want me later for the makeup sex.
Well, I sort of agree. I mean, I have to say, I loved this episode. This episode was way better than season two premiere. Way better.
It was really good.
It was.
I really actually enjoyed it. I mean, as much as we picked it apart, and because we're picky.
We're picky. But it was so good. Before I even took notes, I've seen it like 3 times. And it's funny because it's about them fighting. It's not like they're like, oh, we're so happy, whatever. I expected less. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, this is really good. I loved Angela in this episode. She was amazing.
Yes. She was very supportive of Jane, and we got to see Angela being the caring mother rather than just the crazy mother that Jane wants nothing to do with and wish she'd just stay at home and leave her alone.
And it wasn't just Angela, it was Corsac who was trying to bring them together. It was like a whole group effort of trying to repair this friendship. And even when they were fighting, when they were alone, they were defending each other. It was a great episode. And if this is what the rest of season 3 is going to be like, I'm going to love season 3.
I agree. I'm definitely looking forward to the second episode.
But anyway. But yeah, I'm going to agree with you. She wants me, she wants me not. I mean, come on. The touching. Come on. Definitely she wants me.
I mean, even though technically, I mean, it was a flashback, but still.
That was a great flashback.
My only hesitation is because it seems like this is a really popular episode. So, I mean, they were fighting, but they were pretty much fighting the entire episode. There was the Tommy episode where Jane and Mara were fighting also, and that was a really popular episode because of the emotions and everything like that. So I just, my only hesitation is that I hope that they're not going to change the Jane and Mara friendship and turn it into one of those where they're a couple that fights all the time for the excitement of fighting.
I don't think so. I think because Jane and Mara have this very interesting friendship, because even though they are just friends, it's like they're on this fence of friendship and relationship. It's kind of this weird thing. They're going to fight every once in a while. It's one of those things that happen. But when they do fight, they're finally putting their emotions out there, because when they get along, they talk about other things and they rarely talk about themselves. It's when they're fighting, it's when they're, oh, you hurt my feelings type of thing, and they actually put their emotions out there. And I think that's why they're so popular.
That's all for this episode. If you have any comments, feel free to email us at therizolianowlspodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our website at therizolianowlspodcast.blogspot.com. Follow us on Twitter at the R&I Podcast. If you would like to subscribe to us on iTunes, search Resilient Owls and take a look in the podcast section. Thank you for listening.
And this case is closed.
Voldemort. There is no T. It's a D. Voldemort.
Voldemort and Hermione. Voldemort and Hermione. Why would she name her characters that? Like, it's just
sounds like you have marbles in your mouth that you're trying to roll around.
Well, I could say Harry Potter, but you laugh at me when I say Hilly.
Hey, what's that thing that takes you to the hospital?
An ambulance.
And what's that stuff that grows on bread when it gets old?
It's mold. If you eat too much mold, you're going to end up in a hospital and you have to rush you in the ambulance. And your doctor, Lord Voldemort, and your nurse, Hermione.
That was epic. And you better hope that the road there isn't hilly.
Yep, I hope the road there isn't hilly. And if it rains, you gotta put on your wishy wipers.
Okay, there's a U in the middle of the word. that comes after the B, between the B and the L. It's ambulance.
Ambulance. That's an ambulance. That sounds even worse. It sounds like an ambulance. That's ambulance.
There you go. You said it. Good job.
Ambulance.
Oh, you had it.
Ambulance.
Now you've lost it.
Ambulance. Voldemort. Hermione.
Okay, we'll work on Hermione later.